I am a regular guy, and you're listening to Astrobiological, bringing you the universe and plain human. Leading in there with my first light, The Eventide by The Echelon Effect. Lovely piece. How are you all today? So good to have you here. I am a regular guy, and you're listening to Astrobiological, bringing you the universe and plain human. How are things? So what's going on? Some interesting news today. From an article by Bruce Dorminay, an aerospace and astronomy contributor to Forbes magazine, the first test shot was taken by NASA's TESS satellite, the Transiting Exoplanet Survey satellite. With a spectacular image taken off with a 2 second exposure of some 200,000 stars. The cameras are in perfect working order, as it turns out. And highlights of the first image taken are the Coalsack Nebula and Beta Centauri, a nearby bright star. Over 2 years, TESS will image over 500,000 stars within 300 light years of Earth. And this nominal two-year mission, is expected to detect over 3,000 exoplanets using the transit method. Now, TESS will also allow astronomers to use spectroscopy, a technique which will allow analysis of planets' mass, density, and atmosphere. This data will be further elaborated upon when the James Webb Telescope, Space Telescope, takes wing in 2020. So let's look forward to that. Reading time. Let your imagination be your TV. This is from a blog post, and it's called Water, Water Everywhere. So, we exist here on our rock as it flies around our medium-sized main sequence star, and slowly but surely begin to realize that we're not quite as special as we think. Sure, we've come a long way. This isn't necessarily a good thing. Progress is literally moving forward. By this rationale, the human race has made astonishing progress in the last 200 years. I won't rattle off the myriad achievements we've ticked off the sentient species bucket list, but we've done a lot. Let's just leave it at that. The mobile device or computer you're listening to this on is one tiny part of that progress. But one piece of wisdom we have gained in the midst of all this gadgetry is this. We are not the center of the universe. There, I said it. Ever since Copernicus, Galileo et al. Realized that Earth revolves around the Sun. Much human progress and thinking has revolved around the fact that no, we are not the focal point of creation. Life has gone on before us, and we'll carry on long after we're gone, and that our very planet is turning out to be not quite as unique as we thought. It seems like every second week, a new exoplanet is being discovered and added to a growing bestiary of worlds. Most of those worlds are nothing like Earth, but I believe it's only a matter of time. In our own solar system, water, that miracle ingredient, that thing that makes Earth so Earth-like, is turning up everywhere we look. Water is a bit of a superstar. I won't espouse its virtues here, but suffice to say, absolutely no life, as we know it, can exist without it. Water is turning up everywhere, it seems. Here are a few examples. I will begin this tour with the inner planets of the solar system. For the sake of brevity, I will only glance on each location. At this point in time, current thinking is focused on certain moons in the outer solar system. Outer, meaning beyond the asteroid belt. Water appears to be abundant as we head outward, but I think it fair that the terrestrial planets get some love too. After all, should humanity ever sort out its myriad problems and eventually stop just dipping its toes in the water, one of those worlds might just be a new home for our species. The presence of water would be highly advantageous. Let's put together a little list of locales in the inner solar system where water is thought to exist. I'll include Earth here as the first obvious example. Earth. Home to over 7 billion talking monkeys, loads of beetles, bacteria, and a whole pile of other beasties all jostling about in the tree of life. A middle-aged planet, third from its parent sun in a nondescript solar system moving quietly through the Orion arm of the Milky Way galaxy. There's a lot of water here. about 1,260 million trillion litres. Now, obviously that sounds like a lot, and it is really. But if you want to really get an idea of how much water this is, just ponder this. Of all water on Earth, 96% is saline. 4% exists as fresh water. Of this 4%, 68% is locked up in ice and glaciers. 30% of the remaining fresh water is groundwater, and thus not accessible to all and sundry. About 0.006 of this 4% exists in rivers and lakes. 0.006%. This tiny sliver of the total global water pie keeps all of us talking monkeys alive. So, where is this going? There are vast amounts of water on Earth, but Earth is only one of only 8 planets in the solar system. There are also 5 dwarf planets, of which Ceres and Pluto are the most famous examples, and 182 moons orbiting various objects and bodies throughout the solar system. So what's next? The Sun. Say again, you ask? Ben, are you bonkers? Isn't the Sun that great big hot thing at the center of the solar system? You know, that really big hot thing that is so hot we can feel its heat here from 93 million kilometers away? Yes, dear listener, the Sun is that big hot thing. But researchers have demonstrated the existence of water vapor in the central cooler regions of sunspots. Apparently, so the science goes, these regions are just cool enough that hydrogen and oxygen can get all chummy and form water. Now, liquid water and obviously ice are out of the question, but there you go, there is water on the Sun. Next. Onward to Mercury. Now, poor old Mercury has never had a good trot. The closest planet to the Sun, Mercury got baked clay millennia ago. There's no atmosphere worth mentioning, and so you think that'll be it. It's just a barren, hellish wasteland, right? Wrong. Like all of the inner planets, Mercury's taken a thrashing from impacts over its sad history. It skims around the Sun, pocked with craters. Some of these happen to sit right on the Mercurian Terminator. A Terminator is not a killer robot with poor acting skills. A Terminator is simply the demarcation line where the planet's daytime side meets the nighttime side. This means that some of these craters contain regions draped permanently in shadow. Similar craters exist on our very own moon, and yes, water ice has been observed in them. These ice-filled craters are being touted as a bit of a sweetener for permanent habitation on old Luna. Alas, Mercury doesn't have much else going for it, and it completely lacks a magnetic field, and lost whatever atmosphere it had long before eukaryotes began crawling around. So, say you were an alien visitor to our solar system. Imagine yourself flying in, past the gas giants, what's with that great big red spot? Past all those pesky asteroids, that weird metal asteroid warrants a second look. Even past that blue-green marble with all the chatter pouring out in the EM spectrum. You keep on flying. It's been a long flight, but there are 2 more planets to look at. This next one looks like a big deal. Venus. As you approach Planet 2, you think this place seems a bit like Planet 3. Gravity is pretty similar and it's about the same size. There are even clouds here, lots and lots of them. Okay, it's time to stop using your eyes and switch on some of that fantastic alien tech of yours. Planet 2 isn't so nice after all. In fact, it's downright awful. Some sort of disaster has befallen this planet. No magnetic field, atmospheric pressure that will crush your delicate little space gazelle should you ever choose to land, and temperatures that can bake cakes. There is water here though. Thick choking clouds of carbon dioxide and sulfur enshroud the planet, but there are traces of water in the atmosphere. It's only 0.002% to be sure, but it's there. Your space gazelle, translation, extremely sleek and advanced spaceship, has beauty and brains. Scans show hydrogen and oxygen ions trailing it behind the planet, and you realize that water loss is an ongoing issue for Planet 2. Solar winds have been slowly stripping Planet 2 of water for a long time, maybe billions of years, leaving this hellish, desiccated planet behind. It's a pity, you figure. This place would have been nice once. Planet 3 beckons as a potential home sometime, but the natives are barking mad. Looks like rolling and blowing stuff up might be the only way after all. All that water. Now, Planet 3 has been studied to death, so you decide to swing around and take a look at the red planet. Time for music. That was Branches and Constellations by The Echelon Effect. Moving on. Mars. Dry as a bone. Peaceful to be sure, but this planet is dead. Weighing in at roughly one-third the size of Earth, Mars may have struggled to hold on to any atmosphere it may ever have had. Whilst being a little guy isn't the be-all and end-all, Titan is the largest moon of Saturn, somewhat smaller than Mars, yet 50% larger than our own moon. Titan sports an impressively thick atmosphere, thicker in fact than our own. Unfortunately, Titan can be shown from this article. It possesses oceans of liquid methane. No water here, folks. I include Titan to demonstrate that smaller worlds can possess respectable atmospheres. Mars, like Venus, is missing a key component here. Earth is the proverbial ball of perfect porridge, just right. Many features of Earth are conducive to life, but perhaps one of the most important is the presence of an active core. This one feature prevents harmful cosmic rays from degrading DNA so badly that life mutates itself to death. It also prevents said rays from stripping away our water and atmosphere. This appears to have happened on Mars, and it's happening on Venus as we speak. Now, Mars is turning out to be a slippery customer. Evidence for one-time liquid water in the red planet seems to be piling up. It is heading towards consensus that Mars once was much warmer and wetter than it is today. NASA's Curiosity rover is the closest we'll get to visiting Mars for some time yet, and it has captured some pure Martian magic on its sojourns across the dead and lifeless face of Mars, possibly humanity's first true stepping stone to the stars. Maybe the greatest aspect of Curiosity is that it is quintessentially a human mission. Human eyes see the surface of Mars, beam across vast distances, and tease out information about this place. One simple photo can convey a lot if you know where to look and what to look for. Essentially, the general thrust of new discoveries these days is that it's more likely for water to be somewhere than unlikely. I'll end this broadcast with new insights into water back here on Earth. As mentioned previously, several moons in the outer solar system are posited to possess vast quantities of water in the form of subsurface briny oceans. However, it turns out Earth has a few surprises still up its sleeve. A diamond ejected around 90 million years ago from a volcano in Juína, Brazil, contains imperfections that, like a seemingly trivial clue in some glossy crime investigation show, point the way to the one-time existence of a subsurface ocean deep in Earth's crust. In fact, this ocean was, or is, maybe, posited to have descended nearly a third of the way to the edge of Earth's core. These clues come in the form of hydroxyl ions, which normally only come from water. More evidence is arising, pointing towards water's earlier appearance on Earth than expected. I'll talk about this and similar topics as I'm able and as the information comes to light. More podcasts on water in the solar system will be up as soon as I find time to talk about them. And keep on looking. The universe is there. See you next time. Thanks for reading. I'm a regular guy, and you have been listening to Astrobiological, bringing you the universe in plain human. Talk to you next time.